It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
God, this dialogue is shit.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Halloween Kills weekend, and I still have not had time to watch the movie, but I will be doing that tonight. You know, it's 2021, and we have a new Halloween movie, a Chucky television series, and a new Scream movie coming out in January. I don't know what that says about originality in Hollywood, but I love all three, so I don't mind it. This is episode 726. Of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, October 17th, 2021. I hope everybody is having a great weekend. I am having a very busy weekend because on Friday night, we had a double stream. SmackDown and Rampage. Head-to-head a little bit there. We got a lot to talk about on that front. And then last night was a Saturday Night Dynamite episode since Dynamite had been bumped due to the NHL. And so here we are back at it again on Sunday. And I want to thank everybody who has dropped a PayPal donation like these fine folks here. If you want to make a PayPal, you can always do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the button on the right-hand side of the page is always there, as you guys know. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. Thank you to the Portland pop star Paul Hamilton, Night Stalker Naif Al-Safar, who is with me for every stream that I do every single week in the chat. West Coast James Herrera, Big Bear Brian Becerra, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, the Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, the Diamond Dallas Dance Machine Harrison Soep, New York Punk Arnold Modesto, Ostentatious Alan Carter, John Raging Mad Riffle, the Chicago Screamer Ian Noel Camelotes, Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd. Man, we got to do a tally here. You know, there's going to be some people in the Sound Off Hall of Fame. Who has the most mentions over the years here on this podcast? Graham GSM Matthews. I want to give him a shout out. Graham runs a YouTube channel by the same name. And it features all of his interviews over the past year with some pretty heavy hitters. John Cena, Stone Cold Steve Austin, CM Punk, Goldberg, Triple H, AJ Styles, Charlotte Flair, Drew McIntyre, Daniel Bryan, Adam Cole. The list goes on. A lot of names that you would know. And in fact, his latest interview with Roman Reigns just went up the other day. I'm going to be talking about Roman here in a little bit. But his Roman Reigns interview just went up the other day. He's got a new one coming this Tuesday with Sasha Banks. He's got other daily content up on the channel like Q&A videos, full reviews for WWE and Marvel shows, movies, live reactions, and more. Check out Graham GSM. Graham GSM Matthews on YouTube. And you can find his written reviews and articles over at WrestleRant.com. You hear me mention the name Graham and Graham Matthews here on the podcast a number of times because he has done some great work over on Bleacher Report, and he has been able to get interviews with some of the big names in WWE. So if that name sounds a little familiar to you, that could be where you know it from. And Graham is good people. I've met him a bunch of times. I think we actually bumped into each other once at Citi Field. Actually, I think it was a wrestling event, if I remember, at Citi Field many years ago. It was not a Met game, which was probably for the better. So anyway, give his channel a watch. Again, Graham, I want to thank him for all of his support over the years as well. And someone else I want to thank and also give a shout out to is Richard, who is one of our longtime listeners. He has been dealing with some major issues. I know he's had to undergo 7 surgeries dating back to April. He was diagnosed with cancer. He's got another procedure scheduled soon. Any help would be appreciated to help out a member of the Sound Off community. He has a GoFundMe page set up for anyone who may be able to help. You can search for Future Endeavors Loves You. All one word. If any of you hang out with us on YouTube in the chat, you might see one of our channel members' Future Endeavored. That is him. But just search for Future Endeavors Loves You. Again, all one word. It'll come up under the name Richard Miller on GoFundMe, and anything you can do to help, and hopefully everything is going to work out okay for Richard, because that is not fun. Anytime you hear the C word, that is not a good thing. Dark Side of the Ring this week was the Luna Vachon episode. That review is now up on YouTube. I will probably be pushing the audio out as I usually do. I usually do it a couple of days later because I really want people to head on over to the YouTube channel and check out the video on there. But that is up now. If you did not see it, if you are not subscribed and did not get the notification, it's almost half an hour long. I enjoyed the episode. I thought it was well done. It is very sad because Luna's story is a sad one, and obviously how she ended up is very sad. But Luna is one of those names that you don't forget. If you were growing up as a kid or a younger wrestling fan like I was at that time when she first came into WWE, yeah, she was never like a major name in the company, but she was a big enough name and she had a unique enough look and that voice. Just everything about her, it's hard to forget. So all these years later, you know, if you ask somebody who was even a casual fan who was watching at that time, hey, do you remember who Luna Vachon was? Chances are that person is going to remember. If for no other reason, because this woman, I mean, she had half her head shaved. She had veins drawn onto her face. That voice where she just shredded her own vocal cords. Kind of like Macho Man doing that voice all those years. You get to a point later in life where it's just, you kind of sound that way. You know what I mean? You just destroy your vocal cords. Everything about her was unique. She really was perfect for the wrestling business in that regard because, you know, she got it. She got it. She got that character down pat. But there were a lot of demons behind the scenes when it came to Luna and her life and her health. And anyway, all of that is covered in my review. So go check that out if you haven't already seen it. There was a lot of drama this week that could have affected your favorite and maybe not so favorite pro wrestling shows. The largest labor union representing workers in the entertainment industry, the International Alliance of Theatrical Stage Employees, or IATSE for short, voted this week, or their members voted, to authorize a nationwide strike tomorrow, October 18th, if a new contract was not reached with the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers. Their workers would have gone on strike as of 12:01 a.m. tomorrow morning if they did not reach a deal at some point this weekend. They wanted, basically what they wanted was living wages and more manageable working hours. You know, 12-hour plus days have become the norm, sometimes a hell of a lot longer than that, and it has become dangerous for many of them. That was their position on this whole issue. My cousin is a cinematographer, and she's told me horror stories about the amount of work that they have to do. I gained a newfound appreciation for what these folks do years ago. She got me a role as an extra in a movie that she was filming out in Yonkers. All I really did, outside of what few lines I had, was hang around the set all day. Because you just kind of wait until it's your turn and they need you. And then, of course, it's like 2 minutes and then you do more waiting. So that's really what I was doing all day. She and the other camera operators were really the ones doing all the heavy lifting. From probably, I'd say, 6 in the morning until maybe, you know, 9 or 10 o'clock at night. And I finally left at like 5. I couldn't take it anymore. I had to get the hell out of there. And the kick in the balls is that my part got cut from the final film anyway. So in the end, what did it even really matter? I guess it was all, you know, good for the experience. But it was like a political thriller. I remember I had to wear a suit and a camera around my neck. My job was to be one of the media people asking questions of the mayor at a press conference. But I got a first-hand education that day into how much work really goes into even just a single scene. That really is all that they were filming that day. It was like one or two scenes. That was it. Well, Deadline.com is now reporting, here at the 11th hour, that the two sides have reached a deal to avert a strike. The new 3-year contract has to now be ratified by the union's members before it becomes official. But it looks like disaster has been averted. WWE and AEW both, to my knowledge, use IATSE union members for their shows as part of their road crews. So this is everybody from the camera operators to the people that help set up the stage and the lighting. You know, basically everybody behind the scenes who isn't either a wrestler, a writer, or one of the agents. And if the strike had gone through, as a union member, you're not allowed to cross the picket line. Remember when they did the angle where the WWF referees went on strike in that six-pack challenge at Unforgiven when all the striking referees pulled the scab referee out of the ring and started beating the crap out of him? I think Jimmy Corderas, I think, was the scab ref. But it's very possible that both companies would have just found non-union workers to fill those jobs so they could do live TV this week. I was thinking about that. Like, what are they going to do? Neither company had commented on what their plans were. So I would just assume they were going to fill those roles with non-union members, because I can't imagine WWE just, you know, shutting down shop and telling USA and Fox, hey, we have some old shows that you can run for us this week. We'll never know, because they got their Hollywood ending, so there will be no strike. At least this time, there will be no strike. The Friday night fight between WWE and AEW went down on Friday with SmackDown and Rampage. WWE and Fox really fired the first shot when they extended SmackDown by an extra half hour to screw with AEW, and then they announced that extra half hour would air commercial-free. Tony Khan responded by adding a pre-show for Rampage with Bryan Danielson wrestling Minoru Suzuki. You had to know that this was going to happen. When Dynamite started to close the gap with Raw in the demo that everybody talks about, everyone talks about the demo, and even beat Raw in the demo, at least that 1 week. I think it was 2 weeks, but at least that 1 week they beat them in the demo. After that, and after they invaded WWE's home market in New York and sold almost 20,000 tickets for Arthur Ashe Stadium. And even now, they're outselling WWE in New York for their first show at the new arena in Long Island. All of this, it was inevitable that WWE would react in some way. And we all benefited because we got some great wrestling on Friday night with Danielson and Suzuki. We got one of the best matches all year. And CM Punk and Matt Sydal had a hell of a match. And Becky Lynch and Sasha Banks had what I thought was a great main event on SmackDown on Friday night. Now, the final numbers are not in yet. The early numbers have SmackDown on FS1, because it was bumped to FS1 because of the ALCS, Game 1. SmackDown pulled 793,000 viewers. Rampage on TNT pulled 549,000 viewers. That does not include the buy-in on YouTube, which, last I checked, was closing in on 800,000 views. We'll leave that aside because YouTube views are a totally different beast, and that's over the course of the entire weekend. That's not just on Friday night. Neither number is great, but SmackDown won handily, as I expected them to. Rampage was not beating SmackDown. I'm not sure why Tony Khan made that comment that he made on Twitter, and I joked about it even last week. I said he was, you know, in his follow-up tweets, it was almost like he was sort of backing off. Like, he sobered up and realized maybe he shouldn't have taken that extra step and suggested that I can't wait to beat you head-to-head, because he wasn't beating SmackDown head-to-head. Even if it was just half an hour, even if SmackDown was not on its usual network, which it wasn't, it was on FS1, which is a weaker channel, Rampage was not going to beat SmackDown. That was a dumb thing for him to even suggest. But I gave both shows too much credit in my predictions. I had SmackDown doing around 940,000 and Rampage at around 610 up against that baseball game. The baseball game on Friday night did over 5 million viewers. So for those of you who are ratings obsessed, there's your update. Wanted to give you a little update there. Now, Tony Khan was making the rounds all week long talking about competition with WWE. He really seemed to be sort of gotten to. You know, once they announced that extra half hour for SmackDown, It was like, all right, all the gloves are off now. And he was everywhere talking about WWE in this competition. He told the New York Post, if you want to take the commercials out of it, I can do that too. It doesn't seem very civil, but I have more money than they do. So I can afford to do that longer than they can. But that's how we make money at the end of the day, so I was surprised when they took those out. Now, I don't mind the competition here. I'm tickled by all this. I think this is very entertaining. This is me talking now. This is not Tony Khan. I don't mind him doing this, but talking about how I've got more money than you do just reeks a little too much of my dick is bigger than your dick. Of all the contests that I would love to officiate, a dick measuring contest is not one that appeals to me personally. I mean, to each their own. I think we could do without that. But he continued, he said, in wrestling, we're worth more against each other and we're better off against each other. I believe there is greater value in the wrestling market when we're fighting and people want to see competition in wrestling. I think it's one of the reasons people lost interest in wrestling was because there was not true competition for 20 years. Boy, what a slight that is at Impact, huh? Now with AEW in the mix and competition back in wrestling, I think there are more people excited about wrestling than there have been in a very long time with the free agent movement and good shows. At the end of the day, it has to be good shows. Through the 90s, there were a lot of great wrestling shows. Every week, every month, there would be great stories and great matches, and you couldn't miss it. I think it is starting to get that way again. I have no issue with what he said there. It is making things fun. It is making things fun. And I know what he's saying when he makes those comparisons to the 90s. We're never going to get back to what we had in the 90s. I mean, you had to live through that, I think, to fully appreciate how just fucking crazy it was back then. But he's not wrong. I mean, it did get more people excited about, you know, with the new acquisitions. Now the challenge is keeping those people interested in sticking around. And that's not an easy thing to do. It's like when a champion wins the title, I go, well, you know, winning the title is one thing, but it's harder to hold on to it. It's harder to defend it. It's kind of the same logic here. Not that it's easy for them to kind of build their audience to the point that they have. You know, that takes hard work. That takes good booking. It takes giving people what they want to see, signing big names, figuring out how to debut them. The challenge, though, is once you have the CM Punks and the Bryan Danielsons and the Adam Coles and anybody else that he's going to end up bringing in, Bray Wyatt at some point, whoever it is, at some point, the excitement dies down. It kind of becomes like old hat. And now the challenge is, how do you keep those people from checking out until the next big debut? How do you keep them around so they watch not only those guys, but the other guys? The lesser known people, men and women that you're trying to build up on your roster. That really is where the challenge begins for Tony Khan. But the tribalism with the fan base for these two companies, and it goes both ways. This is not a WWE problem. This is not just an AEW problem. This is a problem for both companies. The tribalism has never been as worse as it is right now. And all you need to do is jump on social media, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, you see it every single day. Every single day. It is toxic. And speaking of tribal, that brings me to the tribal chief. Roman Reigns, who gave an interview to the website Complex.com, mostly about WWE stuff. But he was asked at the very end a couple of questions about AEW. And his comments really stirred up a lot of the AEW diehards. So all this tribalism, I mean, when you have an interview like this, I mean, this just sends them into fucking hyperdrive. So all the WWE stans and all the AEW stans, they were coming at each other with their fucking spears and their pitchforks here. And they didn't really appreciate what Roman Reigns had to say. But this was how the writer framed the question to him. And then I'll read his response and I'll give my thoughts. Generally speaking, on the professional wrestling landscape right now, it is not really a direct comparison, but it seems like there is finally a viable competitor to WWE for the first time since the Monday Night Wars. That period gave us the NWO, Rock and Austin, and the list goes on. But that era sparked each company to up their game. Do you have that mindset at all currently? Is having AEW in the rear view that sort of extra motivation for you to perform that much better, or make sure those moments you make are that much more impactful for the fans? And this is what Roman Reigns had to say. Not for me personally. I'm one of those guys who will compete at anything. I want to be the best at anything that I choose to do. We pull up on lawnmowers, we cut the yard in half, I'm going to beat you. My side will look better than yours. So to me, I don't see the real competition because I think their fan base legitimately is a hardcore fan base. So there's like a ceiling and a built-in ground to that viewership. WWE is trying to connect with everyone. We're trying to connect with the mainstream. We're trying to pull in the casual fan. We're trying to engage the new viewer while also servicing our hardcore fan base and give them compelling stories to fulfill them as well. I've said it before, when the audience is probably the biggest character in your show, that is strange to me. You'll hear it all the time, the reviews and the comparisons, I think because they are the new kids on the block. They're the cool kids in town, I guess, because of how premature and how novel it kind of still is. I think they are still being babied by these hardcore wrestling fans, which is fine. That's great. I don't think anybody's going to ever, especially from a performance standpoint, say, oh no, there's more opportunities than ever before. That sucks. So it's not a bad thing. It's a great thing for pro wrestling. It's just a weird argument because there's so much bias and there's so much I'm on this side and I'm not going to open my mind to the other side. And it goes both ways. As far as competition, not to me. There might be some other people on our roster who maybe think they need to dig deep and get better as a performer and what they do out there at the art form, but there's nobody in the whole world, any other promotion or in WWE. I'm better at this than everybody else. And I stand on that. That's the totality of it. I'm not just talking about, oh, his spots are so good and he counters well. That stuff don't mean anything to me. When you tally it all up, nobody touches me in this business. So there's a lot to unwrap here. He makes a lot of valid points. I have talked about there being a honeymoon period for AEW. You've heard me use that word before, especially with all the recent talent acquisitions. At some point, the new car smell wears off, and they have to be able to stand on their own two feet and keep the stories and keep the matches fresh and keep them interesting enough to keep people excited about the product. AEW generally does a better job than WWE does at not feeding us a constant stream, for example, of rematches. Not that we don't get rematches in AEW. We do. I mean, we're getting Cody and Malakai Black Part 3 next weekend. But it's not the weekly in and out rematch after rematch. Like every week you tune in on Monday night and you expect to see the same fucking matches over and over and over again. They weren't that great the first time. Let alone the third, fourth, and fifth time. AEW is actively trying to elevate the names of a lot of their younger talent by putting them on TV. Guys like Daniel Garcia and Dante Martin and Wheeler Yuta. Guys who fans may look at and go, who? Who are these guys? I don't know who these people are. Well, the only way to educate people about who they are is to feature them on TV. And I think AEW does a very good job of mixing more established names with less established ones. I do think people give AEW the benefit of the doubt on stuff more often than WWE. I think that's a fact. I used to do that with NXT. I used to do that with Lucha Underground. Because I wasn't burned by them the way that I've been burned by the booking in WWE. They earned that goodwill from me. They rarely let me down. So even when they would do something that on the surface, it really didn't make a lot of sense. Like, why are they doing this? Like, this doesn't really make sense. Or if Lucha Underground had a segment or a match or something that I didn't like, I knew that in the end, it would make sense. Or if it was something I didn't like, the next time they would do better. WWE squandered that goodwill with me a long time ago. I hold them to a higher standard because they've been doing this longer than anybody else. And they should know better. And yet they still feed me shit every week and tell me it's filet mignon. This is a company that has been doing this for decades. This is a company, they talk about, we got our finger on the pulse. You got your finger up your ass. So I don't cry for WWE. The criticism they get is well-earned. And when there's reason for praise, I give them praise. Is AEW being babied, as he says, by the hardcore fans? Yeah, I think there is some of that going on. But I also think that AEW largely puts out a more consistently entertaining wrestling show. Tony Khan has done a better job of that than Vince McMahon has. Part of it is that Tony Khan is a fan. You know, for Vince McMahon, I think it's just purely, it's purely business. I'm sure he has fun doing what he does. He's so used to doing it. He's a lot older. He's set in his ways. But if you were to ask me which company has given the fans more of what they really want to see, the answer is AEW. And so long as they continue to do that, then they'll build on that brand loyalty. I know all the WWE drones, they're not going to be able to comprehend anything I just said here. How could you say that they're giving the fans what they want when Rampage ratings have gone down each week and even the worst episode of Monday Night Raw beats Dynamite every week by at least 500,000 or 600,000 or 700,000 viewers? Rome wasn't built in a day or a week or a month. WWE has its core audience of fans, which is eroding a little bit more each and every year. But they have their core audience of fans that will always watch no matter what. That base is bigger than AEW's base. But the growth that AEW has experienced in 2 years, WWE's been around a lot longer than 2 years. The growth they've had in 2 years is very impressive. Now, if we come back here on this show 2 years from now, and the numbers for AEW look exactly the same, then we know they're not growing their base. And that's a problem. Reigns talking about the product only appealing to hardcores and that their viewership has a ceiling, that I disagree with. They do cater to the hardcores, that is absolutely true. But they also have stars on that roster, and not just the ex-WWE names, that can appeal to a more mainstream audience. Without a doubt. They absolutely have characters that can appeal to kids, for example, and not just adults. Darby Allin, Orange Cassidy, those are two names that immediately spring to mind. So I disagree that they have a ceiling and they can only appeal to one kind of audience. They have chosen to cater to one kind of audience. Do I think AEW can have appeal beyond just the hardcores? Absolutely. Now, Reigns calling himself the best in the world is something that I would expect him to say, and I don't have a problem with that. Why would he say anything different? He is one of the best in the world. Right now, at this moment, Roman Reigns is one of the very best in the world, in any company, anywhere in the world. I'm not going to sit here and say he is the best, because that is subjective. But is he one of the best? Without a doubt. Is he top three? Yes. Now, he's never been tested outside of the WWE machine, but I think if you took that Roman Reigns that we see today and you dropped him, right? He didn't have the WWE machine behind him. He didn't have Vince McMahon coddling him. If you took this tribal chief version of Roman Reigns, with or without Paul Heyman, and you dropped him in AEW, or you dropped him in Impact, or almost anywhere else, he would instantly on day one be one of the top two or maybe three biggest names in the entire company. He's got the look. His promos have gotten much better. His work in the ring is very good. Yeah, he wrestles a very different style than somebody like a Kenny Omega or a Will Ospreay or any of the other, you know, big names that you might think of in terms of like big marquee matches. It's a different style, but his matches, he's had some excellent matches. Over the last 13 months that he has been champion, he has had some excellent matches. You can't discount his work. He's believable in the role. He has a certain authenticity to him. When he walks out there, it feels like a star is walking to the ring. And that wasn't the case when he was miscast as a babyface and he was reciting all that horrible dialogue and they had him totally miscast on that show. I don't blame him for that. That was a misfire by Vince McMahon, who was doing everything in his power, regardless of how the fans were reacting, to shove him further and further and further down people's throats until they were gagging on him. Had they turned him heel years earlier, all of that could have been avoided. But now we're finally getting the Roman Reigns that we should have gotten 5 years ago. But I look at him, and again, it's the complete package of what you would look for, I think, in a pro wrestler. That's what we have gotten over these last 13 months. Finally, he found himself. Finally, they got it right. And he's right. It's not just about moves and holds and counters. It's not. And I have no issue with him saying or thinking that he's the best. And anybody who gets upset about that is working themselves into a shoot. I had to get that in there. You didn't think we were going to pass the 10-year anniversary of that Hogan tweet without me giving it a mention. I mean, come on. But that's what these people are doing. They're working themselves into a shoot. They're getting all worked up over nothing. There was nothing he said on that part that is untrue. Now, the writer also asked him about CM Punk. He said, I wanted to ask you about someone specifically on that side of things, CM Punk. He is gone by the best in the world. You arguably are that right now in wrestling. I know you guys worked together in some capacity years ago, but is there a part of you that wishes you could go toe-to-toe the way things are set up now and have a big match with him or something like that? And Roman responds, so I answered a question similar to this a while ago, and it falls back to what our audience wants to see. If our audience wanted to see it and they were clamoring for it, couldn't shut up about it, and all the stars aligned as a businessman and as a performer who was trying to seek out the best for our audience, I wouldn't say no. But I mean, on a personal level, it doesn't do anything for me. That's not going to elevate me at all. He's older now. I haven't really seen a full match. I've seen a clip or two, and to me, a step or two has been lost. Which, if you've seen any of Punk's recent matches, I think he's pretty well worked off that ring rust. He's looked very good in the ring. But he says, then also he got his ass whooped in the UFC. I don't think anybody really believes someone 200 pounds soaking wet with no explosive bone in their body could ever really do anything to me. I'm 6'3", 265 pounds, a legitimate athlete who can throw some weight around and has been on the gridiron at the highest level. D1, all ACC. I probably would have maintained in the NFL if my health issues didn't happen when I was 22 years old. So, I mean, when it comes down to it, I'll throw him and pretty much the rest of that roster out the club. No problem. They're just little brothers, you know? First of all, I don't believe for a second that he has only seen a clip or two. I think he's watched more than he lets on. But again, I have no issue with the shit talk. I love the shit talk. The top star from one company talking smack about one of the top stars in the other company. You could take that same comment about Punk being 200 pounds soaking wet without an explosive bone in his body, and you could apply that to Finn Balor, who Reigns just worked two matches with. And I don't think he has any, you know, ill will or disrespect for Finn Balor. He's just talking shit. I hardly take that as a dig at just the AEW roster, because it's not as if they don't have people like that on the WWE roster. They may have more of them on the AEW roster, but believe me, you got a lot of people who are 5'8", 5'9", 5'10", 200 pounds soaking wet on both rosters. The man knows what he's doing. He's getting people stirred up. That little brother's line was fantastic. I thought that was great. Oh, the anger I saw online from that comment. He has got these people by the balls. And they know it. And the AEW fans are just tripping over themselves. Falling right in line, just like he wanted. Falling like dominoes. He even got Junior Dos Santos to respond. He tweeted earlier, he says, hey Roman Reigns, I heard your interview. Please send the address of this club that you will throw me and my little brothers out of. The man has had one pro wrestling match so far, and he wants to talk that shit. At least we know he could back it up, right, given his background. I don't doubt for a second that he could take Roman Reigns in a fight. If you really wanted to get down to brass tacks, he can back it up. I just love that of all the people on the AEW roster to respond directly to Roman Reigns, it was the one who literally just worked his first AEW match, or match of any kind, the other night. And not for nothing, he didn't look half bad. I said this in the review. For someone who has never done this before, I think this kid's got a future. 37 years old, first getting into the business, but I think this kid just might have a future. Danielson against Suzuki on Friday night was wrestling bliss. If you are a fan of either of those men and you're just looking for a great, hard-hitting, fun pro wrestling match, crowd into everything they did, watching two guys doing what they do best, it's one of the best matches you'll see all year. And as far as it airing on YouTube, I know a lot of people had issues. Why is this on YouTube? This should be on TV. Yeah, there were people saying, oh, this could headline a pay-per-view. It's not going to headline a pay-per-view. I love Suzuki, but this is not going to headline a pay-per-view. Let's not get carried away here. Not that they couldn't stand on the quality of their in-ring work, but you're not going to headline an AEW pay-per-view with Bryan Danielson against Minoru Suzuki. Could it have been on TV? Sure. I'm glad it wasn't. First of all, this was a special attraction. This match was not even supposed to happen. Tony Khan had to call in a favor to get Suzuki in for the match. This was all counter-programming to what WWE was doing. So they wanted to put it on during SmackDown, the hour before Rampage went live. The other issue is also, as far as putting this match on YouTube, we didn't have any commercial breaks. There was no picture-in-picture. There were no interruptions during the match. They gave these guys just shy of 20 minutes. 20 minutes they gave these two. You think these two guys would have had 20 minutes on a one-hour Rampage show? Are you out of your mind? That's the main reason I couldn't understand why all these people who claim to be fans of these guys or they're fans of AEW, so many people, more than I would have expected, had an issue with the fact that this was on YouTube. And I just thought to myself, if you really stop and think about it, if you want these two to go out there and have a great match, it is much better for them to be doing it on the YouTube show than it is for them to be doing it on TNT, because they're going to have plenty of time to go out there and start slow and build and build and build and put on a match the kind that we saw on Friday, which was fucking fantastic. Like I said, one of the best matches I've seen all year between Danielson and Suzuki. But they had to get the match done now. I don't know how long he's going to be in this country for. Suzuki is going to be making his debut for Impact Wrestling in the post-Bound for Glory tapings, October 24th and 25th. I don't think that means that he's necessarily sticking around for a while. He's going to be on those tapings. But at some point in these next few weeks, I assume, he's heading back to Japan. And Tony Khan, even to the New York Post, said as much. They have a very limited window with him. So the opportunity presented itself for them to give the fans what the hardcore fans would consider a dream match between two guys that a lot of people had probably never seen them in the ring before. They had one match together 17 years ago. I don't even know if it's on film anywhere. It was an attraction. It was a gift to the fans. And yet still, people complained. Even the people who wanted to see the match found a reason to complain about the fact that this match was happening on YouTube. Sometimes I just have to throw my hands up in the air and just move on, because I can't understand the thought process sometimes behind some of these people. But AEW aired a Saturday night episode of Dynamite live last night in Miami, second straight night in that venue. Bumped this week and next week from its usual spot on Wednesdays for NHL coverage. The big NHL on TNT debut, by the way, on Wednesday, 817,000 viewers. So less than what Dynamite usually does in the same slot. I know having the NHL is more of a bigger prize for them, even with the lower ratings, and maybe they get higher ad rates or whatever. I get all that, but still, for people who wanted to know, how did it stack up against a typical episode of Dynamite? Not as well. Dynamite would have done at least 200,000 viewers more. Maybe more. But Bryan Danielson has been on quite the tear since his debut. He wrestled Kenny Omega in that 30-minute match at Arthur Ashe in one of the best TV matches in years. A great match with Suzuki on Friday, and what I thought was a very good match last night against Bobby Fish, 24 hours later. The American Dragon looks like he's having a blast out there. He's been breathing fire every night. We had a fantastic Hangman Page promo on Dynamite last night. It was simple. It was effective. He made his points, feeling like a failure, failing to win the AEW championship when they crowned the first champion 2 years ago. Remember, he lost to Chris Jericho. He lost a series of matches after that. He went into this downward spiral of sorts. He lost friends of his. He lost so much. And now he has worked his way back up to where he is going to be challenging Kenny Omega for the championship at Full Gear. Last year at Full Gear, he lost to Omega in the finals of the Eliminator tournament. There's another loss that sent him into a downward spiral. So this has been a very long story arc that dates back 2 years with Hangman Page. Long enough that I think the time for the title change is upon us. I would not drag this out any longer. But I thought his promo last night, the way he delivered it, and all the points he made, I love that point, actually, about going back to when he first challenged Chris Jericho to crown the first champion, and he fell short. You could see the evolution of that character from 2019 to where we are now in 2021. He had a whole building full of people chanting cowboy shit who are clearly ready for this guy to take that next leap. And hopefully he will do that at Full Gear. FTR won the AAA tag team titles from Penta and Rey Fénix. I was not really much a fan of them being out there dressed up as fucking Ninja Turtles in order to do it. But the angle is that Andrade paid off MJF and the Pinnacle for their services to screw over the Lucha Bros. Pac now will get his revenge for his Death Triangle brothers when he meets Andrade. They're going to have a rematch on Rampage this Friday from that first match they had several weeks ago. But they also revealed the bracket for the World Title Eliminator with the finals taking place at Full Gear as it did last year. The tournament kicks off on Rampage this Friday. The first round has Jon Moxley one-on-one against Preston Vance. That's 10 of the Dark Order. Orange Cassidy one-on-one with Powerhouse Hobbs. Bryan Danielson against Dustin Rhodes. And Eddie Kingston against Lance Archer. I see Moxley meeting Orange Cassidy in the semis after the way that Moxley just destroyed Wheeler Yuta on Dynamite last night. Orange Cassidy did not seem to take too kindly to that when he got into the ring to help out his friend. So that seems to be teasing that as a match. I think Moxley wins that and goes on to the finals. On the opposite side of the bracket, I would not sleep on Bryan against Dustin. I know it's disappointing, you know, to see Dustin and not have a different name or a bigger name in there. It's predictable. Nobody actually thinks that Dustin Rhodes is going to beat Bryan Danielson in the first round. I think it'll be a good match, though. I don't remember ever seeing Daniel Bryan against Goldust. Not that Daniel Bryan against Goldust was a match I was clamoring to see. Although Goldust, when he was tagging with Cody and they were feuding with The Shield in late 2013, was just fucking fantastic. I mean, then you know, the match at Battleground, and they did some pretty incredible stuff. So I'm sure it would have been a good match. I don't ever remember seeing them against each other, though. So I think it'll be a good match. I do think they could have swapped out Dustin and Preston Vance for better names. You know, Bryan against Dante Martin would have been a lot of fun to see. Or maybe even save the Bryan match with Bobby Fish instead of doing it last night. You know, maybe save it for the first round of the tournament. But on the flip side, I also understand them not wanting to, you know, take bigger names. Let's say a Ricky Starks or a Miro, someone on that level, or even someone bigger, and just bounce them out of the opening round. That's the issue you run into. Yeah, Bryan against Ricky Starks would be great. But should Bryan be beating Ricky Starks in the opening round of this tournament? Or do you save that for a match on television down the road? I would save that. So that's the issue you run into, right? How big of a name do you really want to put in there with him? I mean, Dustin at one time was a pretty big name. He's not as big anymore, but he's an established name. He's a name for Bryan to beat. So I get it. I mean, but in the same token, the brackets, you know, they obviously could have been better. But I get why they did it this way. CM Punk, you know, they're keeping him away from the title for now and going slow with him, having him build up a win streak. But you have Will Hobbs in the tournament, even though Will Hobbs lost to CM Punk on TV a few weeks ago. I don't see the point, even still, though, of having Punk in the tournament, so I can understand keeping him out of it when you can promote Punk for a different match on that pay-per-view. Why put him in the tournament when you can get a different match out of him at Full Gear? So Brian is going to advance. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Lance Archer against Eddie Kingston should have Archer going over because he should at least win one fucking match in this damn thing before Brian beats him. And then we get Brian against Moxley in the finals. And we were talking about this on the live stream last night. If Moxley is going heel, and there's nothing to suggest, you know, as far as any, like, leaked reports or anything that he's going heel, but just, you know, you see the way he acted on TV last night. He seemed to be in a bad mood. And frankly, I think maybe to freshen him up a little bit, it wouldn't be a bad idea to have him go heel and start showing a more vicious side to him. If Moxley were to be going heel soon, and if Hangman, let's say, is going to win the championship from Kenny, Moxley could win this tournament. It is not a done deal guarantee that Brian is going to win the whole thing. Moxley could win to set up a title match with Hangman Page. I think a Moxley heel turn, though, you know, absolutely could happen. But it would make more sense for it to happen if he loses in the finals, not if he wins. He loses. He falls short against Danielson. And that could be what sends him off the deep end. That could be what leads to the heel turn. So I still think Danielson wins the whole thing, regardless of who walks out of the pay-per-view with that title. I think Danielson is my pick to win the entire thing. Now, Dynamite is delayed until Saturday again this coming week. We're going to get Cody Rhodes one-on-one with Malakai Black Part 3. I was hoping against hope they would have Malakai win match number 2. And he did. He had a cheat to do it, but he won. Right? Back-to-back matches against Cody. Now I feel like I'm getting a little greedy if I say that Malakai should win for a third straight time. I do think Malakai should win for a third straight time. But they're doing like this Rocky 3 or Rocky 4 redemption story here with Cody. He's gone back to basics. Arn Anderson has sent him back to basic training. If you watch that vignette on Dynamite last night, he's trying to get in Cody's head and tell him, look, you got to focus here. So it's this great babyface story that they're telling. I would be very surprised to see Malakai Black get 3 straight wins over Cody Rhodes. I think Malakai's luck has run out. I'd like to be wrong about that. We'll see. That's part 3 coming up on Saturday. And just a programming note, I was live last night. I probably will not be going live after Dynamite this coming weekend. And so if that changes, I'll let you know on Twitter. But otherwise, we'll just save the Dynamite stuff for the podcast next Sunday. Now, at the Jaguars game the other day, Tony Khan was photographed on the sidelines holding a notebook, and visible on his notepad was a page that had scribbled on it what appears to be the card for Full Gear, with matches that up to that point had not yet been publicly announced. Some of them have since been announced. But among them were Hangman against Omega, which seemed obvious, but it wasn't formally announced until last night. And yes, Brian against Mox is another one that was listed on there. Although I think that would have been obvious regardless. I mean, just by looking at those brackets, I think most people would have guessed straight off that we were probably going to get Danielson against Moxley in the finals. But that looks to be the final. Although they could always shake things up and swerve us and go with a different opponent for Danielson in the finals. Inner Circle against American Top Team was listed, so that's got to be that 10-man tag that Jericho challenged them to last night. Punk is listed for a match against Wardlow, which could then lead us to that Punk-MJF feud I've been waiting to see. MJF against Darby Allin. Adam Cole was listed against Christian Cage, who I think is going to lose that Impact World title to Josh Alexander of Bound for Glory next Sunday. Young Bucks against Jurassic Express. Lucha Bros against FTR for the tag titles, which had the word open next to it. So that may be the match that opens the show. It was not specified which titles would be on the line, if it's the AEW tag team titles or if it's the AAA tag team belts that FTR just won, or maybe it's winner take all. Jade Cargill against Thunder Rosa, which they have been building to on TV. Britt Baker against a mystery opponent. The name, it doesn't look like the name maybe has been decided on yet. It was not filled in on the sheet. I'm guessing Anna Jay or Ty Conti. Britt Baker is facing Anna Jay non-title on Rampage this Friday. So if that's the full card, and maybe they'll add like a big multi-man tag match, but if that's the full card, that's a pretty strong card for the pay-per-view next month. And during an interview with Barstool Sports, Tony Khan said that he is in discussions with Warner Media about a way for fans to watch their entire AEW library. Said that he hopes to be able to make an announcement soon for the fans on how they can view everything, including past episodes of Dynamite, Rampage, Dark, past pay-per-views, and The House Always Wins, which was that live event that they taped from Daly's Place earlier this year that did not air anywhere, did not stream anywhere. Actually, I think that was the show where The Butcher injured himself. Because The Butcher only returned a few weeks ago. But he had suffered some kind of a thumb injury. I think he got hurt on that House Always Wins show. So he said it would happen soon, but he provided no further details because talks are still ongoing. So it may only be a matter of time before we get the AEW network. We have a WWE network on Peacock. We may soon have an AEW network. Other news and notes. There was a report this week from Andrew Zarian of the Mat Men podcast regarding Bray Wyatt, that prior to him being released by WWE, some within the company said that he was, quote, being difficult, and that he had some performance issues in the ring, and that he had some weight issues. And Zarian said he wasn't saying that those things are necessarily what led to him being let go, but you can sort of read between the lines and figure that all of those things may have taken together, played a role. And in addition to there being financial aspects to his release, that can't be discounted either, that there were also financial considerations for them doing what they did. WWE, when they fired him, which is what they did, I don't know why people don't use that word. I mean, I use the word released also, but let's call it what it is. The guy got fucking fired. When he got fired, the claim, the belief, the reports were that it was part of their budget cuts. That's the excuse they give to everybody. When they get the call from John Laurinaitis, it's budget cuts, right? So he was apparently told the same thing, budget cuts. That didn't pass the smell test then. It doesn't pass the smell test now. Zarian said that there were financial considerations involved, but that it was multiple things that led to his release. And his own happiness may have played a part as well. To which I say, why wouldn't it? Why wouldn't it? How could this man have been happy being kept off television for months on end when he wasn't even hurt? There was no indication of him being hurt. There was no indication of there being any sort of medical issue that would have kept him out for 5, 6, 7 months. It wasn't mental health issues, as some people erroneously claimed. He was sitting on the sidelines for months doing nothing, collecting dust, watching his character be handed off, basically, to somebody else. It was somebody else's play toy now. Being beaten like a jabroni by Goldberg. Being burned alive by Randy Orton. Losing at WrestleMania and then disappearing. They should have given him a magician gimmick for his great vanishing skills or turned him into a ninja. We all know how much they love their ninjas. They totally diminished that Fiend character and hung this guy out to dry. And this stuff about weight issues, you know, I could believe that weight issues maybe were a problem for him earlier in his career. But when he came back at WrestleMania last year, he looked good. I mean, dare I say, he looks slim. There was even WrestleMania this year. I don't even know what fucking year it is anymore. When he came back at WrestleMania this year, he looked slimmer. And then there was a photo months later that somebody posted online running into him at a supermarket during his time off. And this probably would have been not long before he was let go. And he looked great. So the idea that weight issues played any kind of real role, you know, in him losing his job, to me just reads like a lame reason to excuse the way they dropped the ball with this guy. him being difficult, you know, quote unquote difficult. If I were him, I'd be raising hell too to try to get back on TV and try to get back in the game. I mean, think about it. What have we heard over the years about Bray Wyatt? We've heard about what a great mind he has, what a great creative mind that this guy has. And a lot of the ideas with the Fiend character were ideas of his own, right? So imagine if you have somebody like that with that kind of personality and that kind of mind, where he's always thinking of ideas, itching to get back and do something, and you sideline him. Yeah, he's not going to be very happy about that. Now, what this whole him being difficult, what does that even mean? You know, I hear that. I get the sense this isn't exactly a company that tolerates a lot of dissent. I would love to know how Bray Wyatt was being difficult. Was he being a pain in the ass because he kept telling people, hey, put me back on TV, and they wouldn't do it? Does that constitute him being difficult? I would love further explanation of what exactly is meant by Bray Wyatt being difficult, because all I see here, when I look at how this guy was treated in the last 6, 8, 9 months of his career, if it were me, I wouldn't be very quiet. Maybe he was doing the same, and they just got sick and tired of hearing from him, and they said, let's just get rid of this guy. This guy's being a pain in our ass. But I would love to know what that means. The Observer reported this week that the idea of The Rock making an appearance in Brooklyn at Survivor Series for the 25th anniversary of his debut at the Survivor Series back in 1996 is out the window, because he's going to be on location in Australia filming season 2 of Young Rock for NBC. But the idea is still to do Rock against Roman Reigns at WrestleMania in Los Angeles in 2023. 2023 is a long ways off. And it seems like every time they have a plan for The Rock to get back in the ring, it falls through due to his schedule. I would not bank on a Roman Reigns match with The Rock at WrestleMania 39, WrestleMania 40, or WrestleMania 41. And he may even be open to doing it. I'm not saying he doesn't want to do it. In the past, he has expressed being open to the idea. So they may want it to happen. Rock might want it to happen. I don't see how it ever gets done. The guy is just way too busy. He spreads himself so thin, it doesn't leave time for him to do anything else. I think it's WWE holding on to the dimming hope of getting Rock back in the ring for one last match. And if that's the case, then I think WWE needs to come up with a plan B. WWE has canceled the TLC pay-per-view planned for Chicago in December. This will be the first year without a TLC show since 2008. And as such, there will be no pay-per-views in the month of December. That goes for WWE or AEW. Not a single pay-per-view for either of them in the month of December. The decision came down to them already running a pay-per-view on New Year's Day, with the Royal Rumble then being scheduled for January 29th. So we're going to get two pay-per-views from WWE in the month of January. They did not want to run back-to-back shows within 2 weeks of each other, so they just decided to get rid of the TLC show. I support this decision. Now do Hell in a Cell. Another unnecessary gimmick pay-per-view. Hell in a Cell and TLC never should have been a thing to begin with. The former Buddy Murphy, now going by the name Buddy Matthews, was just announced last night as making his New Japan debut next month at the company's Battle in the Valley show in San Jose, November 13th. That is the same night as the Full Gear pay-per-view. Very cool to hear. Hopefully he, like Malakai Black in AEW, will have a chance to go out there and really start tearing it up in the ring and show people what they have been missing out on. He's a great talent. And I think him in a company like New Japan or him in a company like Impact, I think he would do very well for himself. And I wish him nothing but the best. Hopefully at some point, maybe if that forbidden door swings back open, you know, if he's going to be working with New Japan, who knows? We may get another match one day between Buddy Matthews and Malakai Black. I always enjoyed their matches in WWE. And I sometimes do sad tweet on this podcast, as you know, but this week we have a happy tweet of the week. Not like Happy Corbin, he's the happy twit of the week. It comes from Kevin Nash, who has made quite the babyface turn on social media these past few years. On Friday, he tweeted a photo of himself at the gym with the caption, "Great day at Indiana Comic-Con. Thanks, NWO Nation, for the strong showing. Fantastic hotel gym. Got arms and abs in. Thanks, The Rock," he tagged The Rock, "for putting out these badass kicks. Looking forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. I'll hit my table at 10:30, despite a nice wine list." Nash does love his wine. His wine and his ravioli. Never forget. The Rock responded, since he was tagged, to say, "You're an inspiration, my brother. In tremendous shape. Holy shit. Way to raise the bar." To which Nash replied, "Following your lead. Your work ethic is amazing. Your filming schedule would kill most mortals, but the promotion for your films is the grind. You film and promote at the same time. Sorry I was such a dick to you when I came back in 2002. Just trying to keep my spot." Well, that was nice of him to say and admit. This is not the first time that Nash has tried to make amends for being selfish about his spot during that period. He and Rock exchanged messages last year as well, with Nash saying that he wishes his head was where it is today, back then, that they could have had a great six-month program together if it was. He genuinely seems like he is more reflective now in his older age. You know, the issue between them goes back to when Hogan, Hall, and Nash came back to the company in 2002. On Raw, I think it was the night after WrestleMania, Rock called Nash Big Daddy Bitch during a promo, which was supposedly an improvised line that caught Nash by surprise. He was not happy about that. There were rumors that Nash would always talk shit about Rock when he was still in WCW, that, you know, one day if he and I are ever on the mic together, you know, I'll make him look bad or whatever, which is laughable. But I can believe that he would have, you know, in his mind that he would have believed, he would have mopped the floor with The Rock on the mic. There was heat there, but Nash apparently has seen the error of his ways in giving us a dose of humility on social media, which is not something that we see on there very often. Either that, or he's angling for a spot in the next Jumanji movie. Either way, Kevin Nash wins for Happy Tweet of the Week. Speaking of happiness, this week's episode is brought to you by BetterHelp, affordable private online therapy that can start helping you right now. I want you guys to check out BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. There's no macho pride here, put that aside. If something has been bothering you, if something has been making you unhappy, besides Monday Night Raw, whatever the issue may be, BetterHelp will match you with your own licensed therapist. You could be having a conversation with them in less than 48 hours. BetterHelp is not a crisis line. It is not a self-help resource. These are professional counselors who are trained to do this. You can send a message to your counselor at any time and schedule weekly video or phone sessions, all without having to leave your home. It's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is also available. It's very simple. When you go to BetterHelp.com/Solomonster, you're going to answer a series of questions that's going to help match you with the right therapist for your needs. They have licensed counselors that specialize in everything from depression, stress, anxiety, to relationships, family conflicts, and self-esteem issues. Anything that you share is completely confidential. We all have issues that we deal with every day. Every single one of us, every person, myself, every person listening to this right now, there is some issue that I guarantee you are dealing with on a daily basis, on a weekly basis, on a monthly basis. Some people may think they can deal with it on their own, but not everybody can. And that's okay. That's why BetterHelp exists. That's why I wanted to take them on as a sponsor. This is a resource that really does help people. As you can see from all the testimonials that they post every single day if you go to their website. So start living a happier life today. As a listener of The Sound Off, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting BetterHelp.com/Solomonster. Join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Solomonster. I'll tell you what isn't good for my mental health. Raw on Monday night was another awful show. Tony Khan was spitting facts to Barstool when he said that Raw sucked this week. Hate the messenger if you want, but there were no lies in the message. Even Chucky, who now has his own USA Network show, Chucky the Killer Doll, tweeted from the show's official account, "Less talking, more wrestling." That is a real tweet. Even Chucky cannot hide his disgust for this show. And it was more of the same in this awful Queen's Crown tournament. They did exactly what I figured they would do on the men's side. I was hoping that they might be just a little bit creative. I know it's a lot to ask for. The creative writing jobs in this company are like those no-show jobs that we used to see on The Sopranos. But I mapped it out last week with Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods meeting in the semifinals, the story they could have told. But that would actually make things a little bit interesting. We can't have any of that. No. We can't have any of that. Xavier Woods beat Ricochet to advance to the second round after a pretty good battle, while Kofi fell to Jinder Mahal. And he will now meet Woods in the semis tomorrow night. 10 minutes for the first match, around 9 minutes for the second match, which brings me to the Queen's Crown, and what I said last week about this tournament existing for no purpose other than to suit an agenda. That agenda being, we have a tournament for the men, I guess we have to have one for the women. Even though we really don't want to. We'll do one anyway, and we'll put the minimum amount of effort required into this thing just to get it over with. It is as true this week as it was when I said it last week. The total combined length of all four Queen's Crown matches up to this point is 7 minutes and 32 seconds. The Jinder Mahal match lasted longer than the entire first round of the Queen's Crown. Booting Toni Storm in the opening round was dumb enough, but then having two heels go over to set up a meeting in the second round, that probably zapped a lot of interest I think people may have had in Storm or even Liv Morgan. You know, Liv Morgan had that real underdog story going for her, fighting her way to the finals. I don't mind Shayna Baszler winning quickly on Monday over Dana Brooke because she should be beating people like Dana Brooke quickly. Baszler should be winning the whole damn thing. Doudrop pinned Natalya in just shy of 3 minutes. I mean, that's practically an Iron Man match for these women. This tournament has been an absolute dumpster fire. And it makes me think of all the talent they have in the women's division right now at NXT. Is this what lies ahead for them? 3 minutes on TV, half of which are made up by their entrances. Is this really what they signed up for? Is this what they have to look forward to in their future? Is this what they envisioned their future on that main roster would look like? Not saying every women's match has to be 15 minutes long. There are some that don't need to be 15 minutes long. There are some that don't need to be 5 minutes long. But who gets over in short segments like this? Nobody does. Nobody. They had a chance here to do something special and fun, and so far they have done everything in their power to do the exact opposite. It is as if someone walked up to them with a list of great ideas and said, here's what you should do in the Queen's Crown, and then they turned around and said, well, we'll show this person, we'll do the exact opposite of everything that this person said. We had Ali and Mansoor. They are no more. The Hurt Business picked up a win over them. It means nothing for Benjamin and Alexander. It was over so quickly. I mean, how could it? Ali ate the pin and he was fed up when the match was over. He shoved down Mansoor. I'll bet he is. I'll bet he's frustrated. I'll bet a lot of people in this company are fed up with certain things. He shoved Mansoor down on his ass. And in the back later on, Ali called him a loser and worthless. And he attacked him. He left him laying. I was expecting an announcement of a match for Mansoor this week on the Saudi Arabia show. It looks like we're going to have to wait until Raw tomorrow night to make it. Well, actually, no, we already have the announcement. It's already official. It's official on WWE.com. It will be Ali against Mansoor. They just haven't formally announced it yet on television. But you knew there was no way Mansoor was not going to be on that Saudi Arabia show. They hyped up a tag team match with Charlotte teaming with Becky Lynch to take on Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair, the reluctant partners angle, which they repeated with Drew McIntyre and Big E later on in the main event. Again, I laugh. You know, when we talk about these things, not that we don't see that in other companies. Other companies have done that too occasionally, the whole reluctant partners thing. You know, we're gonna face each other at the pay-per-view, but tonight we have to coexist as tag team partners. But WWE has a knack for doing the same exact angle multiple times on the same show or multiple times in the same week on different brands. They don't even try. It's like, well, we're gonna do this on Raw. We'll do the same thing on SmackDown. Or we're going to do this on Raw. We're going to do it on NXT as well. It's like one hand either doesn't know what the other hand is doing or they don't care. So we got this twice on the same show. And this women's match here ended as a double disqualification when each set of partners started fighting each other. Not sure why that's a double DQ, but it was here. It's not often I say this about a Sasha Banks match or even a Bianca Belair match, but this sucked. Big E and Drew McIntyre fighting for the WWE title at Crown Jewel teamed up in the main event against the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, who were not drafted to Raw. But there they were on Monday. Now, I know the roster changes don't officially go into effect until later this week. But my point is, there was literally no reason for them to be on Raw this week. They just show up. There they are. It's like, why not? I guess we're in a lame duck period, I guess. So there they were on Monday night. McIntyre was setting up for a Claymore kick to one of the Usos when Big E tagged himself in. And he told Drew to get out of the ring until Jay hit him with two super kicks for a near fall. And Big E accidentally knocked McIntyre off the apron. And then he had Jay Uso beat when all of a sudden Drew pulls Big E out of the ring to break up what would have been a win for their team. And the two partners brawled all around ringside until the referee counted them out. Usos wiped them both out with dives. And the babyfaces came back to fight them off before McIntyre caught Big E with the Claymore kick. Drew was bleeding from the head. He had a nasty knot right on his forehead at the end of all this. But this was their way of building up their match in Saudi Arabia, which nobody believes McIntyre has a chance of winning because he's already been drafted to SmackDown. A terrible show. If I have to sum up Raw in three words, a terrible show. I should start doing three-word reviews for Raw. Be a lot easier. A terrible show is this week's review. Tomorrow night, it's Charlotte defending her Raw women's title against Bianca Belair. Big E and Drew McIntyre team up yet again to take on Dolph Ziggler and Big Bob. Randy Orton and Matt Riddle, non-title, take on the Street Profits. Xavier Woods against Jinder Mahal in the King of the Ring semifinals. And Doudrop takes on Shayna Baszler in what I'm sure will be another beat-the-clock challenge in the Queen's Crown tournament. SmackDown on Friday night, I reviewed already on YouTube since it was a big night. I decided to go live and do it there. It was not a great show, but there were some good matches. Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch, I thought, was very good. Easily the best thing on the show with Sasha going over. That was Becky's first real loss in about 2 years. Usos and Street Profits had a street fight that was also good. Likely the final meeting between the two teams with them being drafted to separate brands. Although this week, like I said, the Usos just showed up on Raw. So maybe they have carte blanche, or maybe they'll be able to show up on TV whenever they feel like. But I suspect this will be the last time we see them in the ring together for a while. And I thought Finn Balor and Sami Zayn had a good match in the King of the Ring semis, with Balor, unsurprisingly, going to Saudi Arabia to meet either Woods or Mahal in the finals. We still don't know why Sonya Deville hates Naomi so much. They were supposed to have a singles match, but Sonya turned it into a handicap match with her and Shayna Baszler against Naomi. And Sonya picked up her first win since last year when she lost to Mandy Rose at SummerSlam. Zelina Vega advanced to the finals of the Queen's Crown with a win over Carmella. Another waste of television time this was, as all of these matches have been so far. And Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar, they both signed the contract for their title match at Crown Jewel this Thursday, which leads me to Thursday. Thursday at noon Eastern is the start time for Sweet Saudi Money 6, enough of this. Crown Jewel, live from Riyadh. Their first trip back to Saudi Arabia since Super Showdown in February of last year. That was the night that Goldberg killed The Fiend. A very sour memory. One that I would like to forget. Maybe they can wipe the slate clean and start over with this show. Because this, on paper, is the strongest lineup for any of the Saudi shows that they have done so far. This is because this is their only pay-per-view this month. You know, usually the Saudi Arabia shows are tacked on. They're an extra show. But this is the show. This is the only big show they have scheduled all month. And so they have loaded it up with a very pay-per-view-worthy card by WWE standards here. We have Finn Balor against either Jinder Mahal or Xavier Woods in the finals of the King of the Ring. I am predicting a Balor-Mahal final with Balor winning the crown. King of the Ring has traditionally been a heel gimmick. In fact, the last time a babyface won King of the Ring was 20 years ago. 20 years ago this year when Edge did it in 2001. So even though there's two babyfaces and one heel left in this thing, the odds seem to be against a Balor win. And even more against an Xavier Woods win. But I'm picking Balor to take the crown. I'll buck the odds, and I'll go with Finn Balor. Zelina Vega will meet either Doudrop or Shayna Baszler in the finals of the Queen's Crown. If this is not setting up for a Shayna Baszler win, then I'm not even sure what we're doing here. I say Baszler or bust. But, there's a big but here. After they got her involved in the angle with Sonya and Naomi on SmackDown, my fear is that Naomi is going to show up on Raw tomorrow night, and in retaliation for what happened to her on Friday, she is going to cost Shayna Baszler her match against Doudrop. So that is something to watch for. Even though I'm pulling for a Shayna Baszler win, we may be getting Doudrop and Zelina Vega in the finals of this tournament. Mansoor against Mustafa Ali. They did the breakup angle on TV Monday night with Ali going heel. Mansoor was not going to be the bad guy in Riyadh. Nor is he going to lose this match. This was all done simply to give him someone to beat. Ali drew the short straw, as he has been doing for over a year now. So he's going to be looking up at the lights on Thursday. On a positive note, these two are really good. And I think the match also should be really good. Randy Orton and Matt Riddle defend their Raw Tag Team titles against AJ Styles and Omos. Orton and Riddle retain, that's my prediction. Omos is far from ready to venture out on his own as a single star, but AJ Styles just feels wasted at this point in this role. I can understand them wanting him to kind of guide Omos, and I can't think of a better person on this roster for him to watch and learn from than AJ Styles, but it's been so long now with this, and they had their run as Tag Team Champions. It's over. I don't know why this is continuing outside of the fact that they just don't have any other teams. But in the meantime, it just feels like Styles, you know, he's a big star on that roster. And at a time when they really need big stars to step up in the singles division, AJ is being wasted. You know, for a company that needs stars, they have one right under their nose. So I'd like to see him back in the singles ranks and not winning the tag team titles again. And then we have Goldberg against Bobby Lashley in a no-holds-barred match. They reunited the Hurt Business so that Goldberg can mow through them like he did on TV a few weeks ago. And I think he probably will do it again here. It is no disqualification. So Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander could get involved. It is no DQ. But the key here is that the WWE title is not on the line. Because Lashley is no longer the WWE champion. And that's great news. It's not great news that Lashley isn't the champion anymore. It's great news that Goldberg will be kept away from the WWE title. As he should. And without the title on the line, that clears the way for a Goldberg win. Now, I still resent what they did with him on the last Saudi show. I cannot excuse that. There is no excuse for the booking on that show. I know they wanted spear against spear at WrestleMania last year, Goldberg against Roman Reigns. They killed The Fiend for no reason. The entire purpose of them putting Goldberg over The Fiend was to transition the championship from Goldberg to Roman Reigns and to get the big marquee match between Goldberg and Reigns. Who's got the bigger spear? Which just sounds so wrong. But that's the match they wanted to do, and they never even got to do it. They never even got to do it. What they did in Saudi Arabia was some of the worst booking in this company in the last 20 years. But Goldberg's son was attacked by Bobby Lashley. And Goldberg has literally threatened in the build-up to this match, he has literally threatened to murder Bobby Lashley. The babyface is going into this match avenging his son. Goldberg is not going to Saudi Arabia to lose this match. He is going to beat Bobby Lashley. I don't like it, but at least there's no title involved. I only hope that nobody gets hurt. Goldberg has yet to have anything resembling a good match on any of these Saudi shows. There's a first time for everything. I think we'll see Sunberg get involved with father and son celebrating at the end of this. Becky Lynch, Sasha Banks, and Bianca Belair. Triple threat match for the SmackDown Women's Championship. Big Time Bex, as she is calling herself. She starts on Raw next week after the roster changes take effect, as does Bianca. Sasha is staying on SmackDown. Sasha pinned Becky on Friday night in a non-title match. So I don't see her winning the title, even though she is the only one staying on SmackDown. It would kind of make sense for her to walk away with the championship. I don't see that happening. Bianca, I would say Bianca has a chance, but a very slim one. Because I think the match they want to do at Survivor Series is Charlotte against Becky Lynch. That, plus they've already announced that Bianca is wrestling Charlotte on TV tomorrow night. Why give that away if you're going to turn around and give it to us again at Survivor Series? So this should be a Becky Lynch win, likely getting her her win back over Sasha Banks to retain the title, which spares Bianca from taking the losing fall. I expect an excellent match from these three. Curious what they're going to be wearing, given where they are performing. Edge against Seth Rollins. Inside Hell in a Cell, we got a great, intense go-home promo from Edge on Friday night. He's always very good at that sort of thing. Rollins, not so much. I cannot stand him on the microphone with this new gimmick. I just can't. But in the ring, the man can go. Their first two matches were excellent. They're one win apiece at this point. Hell in a Cell is the perfect stipulation to blow off this feud, which I think was put together with the idea that in the end, Seth Rollins comes out on top. And if I'm right, then Seth Rollins is going to win this match. I think Edge puts up a brave fight, but Seth gets the victory and a chance to erase the horrible memory of his last Hell in a Cell match, one of the worst matches in the history of this company, with maybe one of the best. He might be able to replace the memory of one of the worst with one of the best. I think these two have it in them to try. Maybe it won't be the best, maybe it won't be the best. But this should be very good. Big E defends the WWE Championship against Drew McIntyre, who is bound for the blue brand. So McIntyre has no chance of walking out with the title, which takes all the drama out of the finish. It's a big name for Big E to beat, I guess, on his way out. Nothing more, nothing less. Big E retains. And Roman Reigns defends the Universal Championship against Brock Lesnar. The last time these two clashed in Saudi Arabia was also for the Universal title at the very first Saudi Arabia show, the Greatest Royal Rumble, 3 years ago. And the winner of the Greatest Royal Rumble that year is no longer employed by this company. This time the roles are reversed, with Roman as the heel with Paul Heyman as his manager and Brock Lesnar as the babyface. This is the first of what is likely going to end up being multiple matches between these two men. Lesnar is said to be disappearing again after this, possibly until the Royal Rumble. This does not feel like the right time for Roman to be losing the title anyway. He's going to retain here. The only question is how. He may not win this match. He could retain the title, but lose the match. You know, so does he pin Brock Lesnar? I wouldn't have him pin Brock Lesnar. You know, not if you're going to bring this back again in the future. So we either end up with a no contest or a cheap DQ off of interference from Paul Heyman and or the Usos. So Brock could win the match, but not the championship. I think that's the most likely outcome here. There is another possibility. I don't think it happens. I'm not really giving it a lot of thought as anything serious, but if they wanted to pull off a major swerve and get people talking coming out of the show, they could book a double turn with Heyman revealing that, in fact, he really has been with Lesnar this entire time. As skeptical as Roman and the Usos have been of Paul Heyman, and Heyman has been coming out on TV and giving these great performances, my tribal chief. I mean, this is Paul Heyman on TV every single week. The man is practically in tears every time he looks at Roman Reigns. Maybe we come to find out that it really was all just an act. And in fact, he has still been with Brock Lesnar this entire time. And in fact, he helped orchestrate Brock Lesnar's return to WWE. I don't like the idea because I don't think Roman should be a babyface right now, or that the bloodline should be going babyface. But it would be a great swerve. You know, if Heyman revealed himself to be with Brock and he helped Brock win back the title and Roman flips to more of a tweener on the show as he fights his way back to a rematch with Brock at WrestleMania. I don't see the timing on this being good. Yeah, they just moved Drew McIntyre over to SmackDown. Jeff Hardy, I think you can get at least one match out of that. You know, Hardy against Roman for the title. There's more matches for Roman between now and WrestleMania before I would even think about doing a turn. After the pay-per-view, the SmackDown crew flies to Wichita, Kansas for a live show on Friday night. That's at least a 15-hour flight, barring any delays or layovers. When the talent got stranded 2 years ago and they had to have that NXT invasion on SmackDown, it was one of the best shows of the year. But the NXT roster looks very different today than it did 2 years ago. So I'll be streaming live immediately after the pay-per-view ends. So if it's starting at noon, which I believe it is, I think it's noon Eastern. I don't know if it's noon Eastern for the pre-show or if there is no pre-show and the actual card starts at noon, but they're saying noon Eastern. So that would probably mean around 3 o'clock or so. It'll be over, maybe a little after. So figure I'll be live around that time. You'll get a rare Thursday afternoon Solo Monster stream. And we'll talk about Crown Jewel.
You want a friend? Go get a dog. I don't give a
NXT this week opened with an abduction in the parking lot. The most dangerous place in all of WWE is the NXT parking lot. Multiple kidnappings have taken place in that parking lot. This time, it was Top Dollar and B-Fab. Maybe they just wanted his sneakers. Top Dollar and B-Fab of Hit Row, they were grabbed by Legado del Fantasma. Swerve Scott was assaulted but not abducted ahead of his North American title defense against Santos Escobar. I like to think that these segments, when I see these kidnappings, I see them as a reenactment of how these main roster call-ups are usually done. Just picture Vince McMahon and Bruce Prichard. They drive up and they throw a hood over their head and just grab them, kicking and screaming as they throw them into the back of a van and they speed off while Triple H gives chase. I think that's usually how this works. Joe Gacy was in the ring calling it his safe space again and referring to the fans as his snowflakes and vowing to win his match against Tommaso Ciampa and earn his way into the NXT Championship match at Halloween Havoc, which he would have done had he won this match, but he didn't. He held his own in there against Ciampa, but it would have ruined the title match to add him or anybody else to it. It should simply be Ciampa against Bron Breakker. When it was over, Ciampa was attacked by the now former Parker Boudreaux. Baby Brock. Remember when they signed him? All those pictures of him, he looked like a young Brock Lesnar. Well, he no longer looks like a young Brock Lesnar because they decided to change his look and they had him shave his head. So now he looks like Gene Snitsky. That is a downgrade. Now he's just a bald guy with tats. And the new name they originally gave him was Gunnar Harland, which has since been shortened to simply Harland. So now they're shortening names in NXT before they even hit the main roster. They're not even waiting until they get to Raw or SmackDown. That's how you know Vince McMahon is overseeing things now with NXT, now that we're getting names that are being shortened before they even make the main roster. They're getting him ready. But he grabbed Gacy by the throat when Gacy walked over to try to stop him from beating up Ciampa, and Gacy then started stroking Harland's face. And Harland took off out of camera frame, into the crowd, I guess. The camera didn't move. It just stayed on Gacy, so we have no idea where he ran off to. It looked like an announcement came over the PA system that his car was being towed, the way that he beelined out of there. Off to the parking lot. I hope he didn't get abducted. Toxic Attraction was out for a promo with Mandy Rose challenging Raquel Gonzalez to a women's title match at Halloween Havoc, and Gigi Dolin and JC Jane vowing to take the women's tag team titles from Io Shirai and Zoe Stark. Later in the show, Raquel did a pre-tape promo where she said her match with Mandy will be spin the wheel, make the deal, like they did on last year's Halloween Havoc show with Io Shirai and Candice LeRae. They'll spin a giant wheel, and whatever stipulation it lands on, that will be the stipulation for their match. Unless it lands on budget cuts or something, and then I guess that'll be the end of them. They do this thing now on this show where they start playing someone's entrance music for the next match while people are still in the ring wrapping up the previous segment. I guess to try to keep the pace of the show moving along. Ivy Nile had her first match as a member of Diamond Mine. I like her look when she comes to the ring with that chain draped over her neck. She is the powerhouse of the group. Small as she is, she's a tiny woman. But she is the powerhouse of the group, and she got to show off her strength here in this match. She submitted Valentina Feroz with a torture rack-like hold. She was doing squats with Valentina on her shoulders and bending her like a pretzel. Malcolm Bivens cut a promo after with all the members of Diamond Mind in the ring together behind him. I'm so happy that they stuck with this group and they made it stronger after they released Tyler Rust. It felt like maybe they're giving up on Diamond Mind, but they got rid of him and then they moved new members into the group. I mean, they could have easily given up on this whole thing, but adding Nile and the Creed brothers totally breathed new life into the group. The exact opposite of what they've done with Tian Sha. You know, once they lost Xia Li, that was it. That group is dead. DOA. But Diamond Mine has only gotten stronger. And I'm glad that Bivens is being given the chance finally. Because he's been down there for a few years now. And finally now he's being given the chance to show off his managing chops. They were interrupted by Ikem and Jiro, one of the new fan favorites on this show. Julius Creed, one of the Creed brothers, got up in his face and Jiro slapped him. That led to a match after the break. Jiro wears his jacket during his matches. It hasn't been made clear why he does this. I would think it would be very uncomfortable. Jiro got some offense in before Creed pinned him after a sliding lariat. As they beat him down after the match, Kushida ran down for the save, and he too got beaten. He too got beaten down by the members of Diamond Mine. We got another awful lashing out with Lash Legend segment, where she talked about the WWE draft as they cut to a live audience doing the fake laughing for all of her terrible jokes. There was a Squid Game reference in here. I have not seen this Squid Game show. I keep hearing about it. I'm going to have to watch it. I literally thought it was like a Food Network show. I thought it had something to do with seafood. I am told that it actually is a Netflix show that has nothing to do with that, but I'll have to watch the first episode and see if it's any good. Anyway, she also turned down Tony D'Angelo's request from last week. He had made overtures last week about wanting to come on her show, and he was denied. Now, later on, we got a Tony D'Angelo vignette. Outside the building, he was leaning on his car, talking about his successful debut last week. He said the producer for the Lash Legend show said that there was a scheduling conflict that prevented him from being booked, and that's why he couldn't be on the show. So he blamed the producer for this. And when he walked away from the car, we could hear a voice coming from the trunk, and the car was shaking, implying that the producer was inside. That was our second kidnapping on this show. I hear he killed 16 Czechoslovakians, that producer. The guy was an interior decorator. Tony did what had to be done. Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner. Oh my God. Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner. This is the most forced alliance that I have seen in a very long time. And I get that they're using Kyle to try to help elevate Wagner because Kyle is more established on the NXT brand. But they have no chemistry whatsoever. It's like if you tried to match with a girl on Tinder and you looked for someone who was the exact opposite of you, in every single possible way, and then you decided to date them. That's what this is like. Wagner got the win for his team, though, over Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland. Wagner pinned Holland, who's on his way out of the territory. He's on his way to SmackDown. Von Wagner sounds like a name that you would use in a dating app if you didn't want to use your real name. So if I was on the app, what's one of these dating apps? Slap Happy or something, you know, whatever. Whatever, I'm making up some kind of name for a dating app here. I would use the name Von Wagner. That's what this name. This name is the most ridiculous name outside of Braun Breaker. It is the most ridiculous name on all of NXT. I don't know why they thought that this would be a good name for this guy. Either, I get, you know, they don't like using the real name anymore because they want to own every fucking part of their souls. But is Von Wagner the best that you could come up with? If I went to a random generator on the internet somewhere, I went to some kind of random name generator, and I said, generate me a name. I guarantee you, I would get 15 different options that are better than Von Wagner. I just can't take that seriously. Duke Hudson, whose new gimmick is that he is a master poker player, pinned Grayson Waller. Backstage later on, Grayson didn't seem too bothered by the fact that he lost. He was flirting with one of the female wrestlers. First, he tried to come on to Cora Jade, who blew him off. We'll see if that leads to anything between him and Trey Baxter this week. But Cameron Grimes came up to him and wanted to know how he could score with the ladies like Waller. And Waller suggested he needed some manscaping, especially with all that chest hair. And he talked about his big bushy beard and trying to get him all cleaned up. And he pulled out his phone to show him pictures of women in some dating app. Maybe it's that Slap Happy app that I just created. He's showing him pictures in a dating app. And I'm watching this and I'm just thinking to myself, boy, has Cameron Grimes fallen off from where he was only a couple of months ago? This guy went from being one of the most popular babyfaces on the show, who felt like he was on the cusp of maybe breaking out to that next level, to completely being lost in the shuffle. Like, this reboot could not have come at a worse time for someone like Cameron Grimes. And now we get a report from the website WrestlingNews.co that claims they heard that the reason Cameron Grimes was not called up to the main roster in the draft is because Vince McMahon wanted changes to be made to the presentation of his character. And based on this segment here, it looks like the makeover is coming for Cameron Grimes. Which always concerns me when I read things like this. All the stories in the past of Vince McMahon wanting guys to cut their hair. And in some case, I mean, there were reports about that with Adam Cole, that they wanted him to change his look or maybe cut his hair. Remember the story of Lance Archer when he was in WWE? They cut his hair, and they still didn't use him. It was like 5 minutes before he was going out there, I think, for his match. They wanted him to cut his hair. Angel Garza, he was told last year to cut his hair because they had plans for him, and then plans changed. And he wasn't on TV for what, 6 months? I don't know if a haircut is going to be part of this makeover. There is not much about Cameron Grimes that needs to be changed. He got over on his own as a babyface. There is a reason why I have said when I look at the NXT roster, the closest thing I could see to someone getting over organically with the fans the way that someone like Daniel Bryan did in that babyface underdog role is Cameron Grimes. I believe that if Cameron Grimes was called to the main roster, the fans would take to him. And they may end up pushing him more than the company would push him. He could be that Daniel Bryan type of babyface. There's no need to blow up the man's character. But it looks like changes are coming. He's not even on Raw or SmackDown yet, and already they're tinkering with him. This concerns me. This has me very worried. Indy Hartwell and Persia Parada are now a tag team. When Indy was getting married and they had her big bachelorette party, They mentioned that the two of them were best friends, but that was really the extent to which we know anything of the sudden on-screen friendship between these two women. They got a win over the team of Saray and Amari Miller. Hartwell pinned Miller for the win. How much do you want to bet that this friendship of theirs and Indy's marriage ends with Dexter and Persia being caught in bed together? After the match, Persia said that she and Indy are going to go after the women's tag team titles, which brought out the champions, Io and Zoe. Toxic Attraction then came out and a brawl broke out. At Halloween Havoc, it's going to be a three-way with these three teams for the women's tag team titles. They have done almost as piss-poor of a job with the NXT women's tag team titles as they have done with the main roster women's tag team titles. But at least this division actually has some life to it. It has a pulse. I cannot say the same thing for the two paperweights that Rhea Ripley and Nikki Cross are currently holding right now. We got a coming soon vignette for yet another new name, Solo Sikoa. Hey now, there's only room for one Solo here. Solo Sikoa, he is the son of Rikishi and the brother of the SmackDown Tag Team Champions, the Usos, Jimmy and Jay. He is the third Uso. And that makes him the cousin of the tribal chief, Roman Reigns. But they didn't mention any of that in this promo here. He said he got the name Solo after being left on his own from a young age. And he was street champion of the island. He did not specify what island. It could be Long Island. I don't recall him being the street champion out there in Nassau County, but I suppose it's possible. I thought the street champion of the island was MJF, who grew up in Plainview. Maybe it was Solo Sikoa. He didn't specify what island. Main event was Isaiah Swerve Scott defending his NXT North American Championship. His first defense since winning the title in June against Santos Escobar. I thought for sure with Swerve moving to SmackDown, this is where the title would finally go to Escobar, who was not drafted. But he should have been. Instead, they swerved us. Swerve got swerved on this show. Scott gave Escobar a Death Valley driver on the ring apron. He followed that up with a 450, but Escobar got the knees up. The kidnappers, Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde, ran down to cause a distraction and probably give their ransom demand, I would imagine. But here comes Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams. They run out to fight them off. Escobar ends up going headfirst into an exposed turnbuckle, and he takes the JML driver. Swerve Scott, surprisingly, retains his North American title. And Hayes and Williams, they step into the ring to raise his hand, and they're celebrating with him, only for Carmelo Hayes to level Swerve with a clothesline. And he signs his contract, the one that he won in this year's breakout tournament, which is good for a shot at the championship of his choosing. There's only been one other breakout tournament 2 years ago. They didn't do one last year. And that was the one that Jordan Miles won, ACH. And he chose to challenge Adam Cole for the NXT Championship, but it was not handled like a Money in the Bank cash-in. This was handled like a Money in the Bank cash-in, which I am not a fan of. But he cashed in, and he pinned Swerve to win the title after a guillotine leg drop to the back of the head off the top rope. Carmelo Hayes is the new NXT North American champion. I don't hate the choice as champion. There's a reason that Hayes was my pick to win the breakout tournament in the first place. I think he's got it, whatever it is. He I think, is going places. I think he's going to be a major star. But Santos Escobar does not get the respect that he deserves. That spells the end of Swerve and Hit Row on NXT. I don't know what that means for Legado del Fantasma. But if Hit Row is off to SmackDown, I see no reason why Legado should not have been shipped off to Raw. You know, Meltzer this week suggested that the reason Escobar was passed over for a call-up may have had something to do with his age. He's 37 years old. Let's not act like 37 is too old to contribute and to be a star on the main roster. When Alberto Del Rio debuted on WWE television, he was 34 years old. And the reason they were so high on him is because they were looking for a Spanish-speaking star to add to their roster. Escobar speaks Spanish, but he also speaks fluent English. In the ring, his work speaks for itself, and he's only 3 years older than Del Dipshit was at that time. So the age excuse does not wash. It is nonsense. We're not talking about building the company around him. We're talking about adding a talent still in the prime of his career to a roster that could use him. So you're going to have to do better than that if you want to come up with a good reason to explain to me why this man should not be on Raw or SmackDown when Damian Priest is being pushed on Monday nights and he's 2 years older than Escobar is. So spare me the bullshit excuses. What does Damian Priest have that Escobar doesn't? I'll tell you what he's got. He's got about 8 or 9 inches in height. That probably has more to do with it than anything else. And that's still not a good enough reason not to call this guy up. So what happens to Escobar now? You know, even though I would put the NXT title on Bron Breakker at Halloween Havoc, I said that last week and I stand by that. If Ciampa retains, I think Escobar should be next in line. You know, after he rebounds with a few wins, he should be next in line to challenge Ciampa for the championship if he does not lose the title at Halloween Havoc. Let's do some mailbag questions. You can always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Kevin, in Albany, New York, we'll know after the numbers are out, but I've been loosely following wrestling the past few weeks and did not know that SmackDown was on FS1 or that they were doing a stacked lineup. I probably wouldn't have tuned in if I didn't see all the headlines that Tony Khan created. What do you think? He's a promoter and should react to WWE's antics, or should he push his promotion stronger in media and not bring up the strong lineup that WWE is putting on? I think a little bit of both. I think it's fine to talk about WWE to an extent, especially if you're going out of your way to sort of compete with them and put on big matches to compete against their big matches. I mean, for the fans, to me, it's all fun. I could see going a little too far with it. You don't want to talk too much about WWE and give them too much free publicity because they have plenty of money. They could pay for their own publicity. They got a good PR department over there. So I think a little bit of both. I think you want to focus mainly on what you're doing and your show, but it's okay to talk about the competition if there's a reason for it. Sometimes in these interviews, you have to understand something Tony Khan says, let's say, makes a headline. Maybe he doesn't bring it up. The interview with Roman Reigns that I talked about earlier with the Complex website. He was doing a whole interview talking about WWE, and then at the very end, the writer brought up AEW and CM Punk. And so he gave an answer. But all the headlines were about Roman Reigns dunks on AEW and Roman Reigns dunks on CM Punk. If the writer doesn't ask him about AEW and CM Punk, then we're not having this conversation. So That also sometimes, I think, happens. But, you know, Tony went crazy this week. He brought it up himself in a lot of the interviews that he did. I don't really have an issue with it as long as he remembers to just focus also on AEW equally and make sure he gets the message out about his own product. And I think so far he's been able to do that. You know, he's smart enough to understand that when he is out there doing interviews, he needs to focus on AEW first and foremost. If he talks a little bit about what WWE and Vince McMahon are doing, so what? Why does this drive people nuts? You know, if Vince McMahon was out there doing interviews, and he doesn't do very many interviews these days, you know, but let's say Stone Cold invited him back for another episode of the Broken Skull Sessions, right? Or, well, he was not technically on the Broken Skull Sessions. That was a live podcast that he did with Austin. But let's say Austin says, hey, we want Vince McMahon back. I want to have him on my new show. I would love for Austin to ask him questions about AEW and you know, competing organizations and see what Vince McMahon has to say. I don't think he would have anything very interesting to say. He probably would be very corporate and very, you know, boring and vanilla in his responses. But it's a question that I would love to hear him answer. I wouldn't freak out over it, you know, if he starts commenting on AEW, unless he says something absolutely stupid. The time that he was asked about AEW on one of those investor calls, Vince, that is, when they made the comment, or it was him and or Nick Khan made the comment about not viewing them as competition. See, that was a stupid comment to make. That's the difference. If you're going to talk about them and say stupid shit like that that we all know you don't believe because your actions speak differently than your words, then they deserve to be called out on that. But if people from WWE wanted to talk about AEW in interviews and what they think of them or competing against them, I'd have no issue with that. Javon from the Bronx, if CM Punk stays in AEW for a long time, can you see him taking the role of an Undertaker, where he is the old guard for the company and locker room leader, gets called on to do one match a year when he starts to do fewer matches? No, I don't see him doing one match a year. I mean, he literally just joined the company, so it's a little premature to be talking about him being there so long that he's, you know, down to doing one match a year. I don't see that. I get the sense he's already something of a locker room leader. You know, he's talked about talking to the younger guys and trying to, you know, give them pointers and advice on some stuff. So I already think that's happening. I think with him and Danielson, part of the great thing about having them in that locker room is that it doesn't just motivate them and reinvigorate them to be surrounded by all these young kids, but they can really help them. Because they've been there before. They've been to the top of the food chain. They've been to, I was going to say the main event of WrestleMania. I'm sorry, Punk. But Brian has been there twice, and Punk has obviously been a major star and a world champion. And I think that having them there as like a veteran presence is a good thing. And I think it's already being felt in the locker room right now. Him being an Undertaker. I mean, there's only one Undertaker. Undertaker was there for, you know, forever. But as a locker room veteran people can look to, I think we're already seeing it. Edgar from Chile, or as we all know him from YouTube, Bret Hart, which is one of my favorite names on YouTube. It combines two of my favorite things. What if Matt Riddle betrays Randy Orton? I know a lot of people expect Orton to betray Riddle eventually, but I personally believe it is too obvious. I know Riddle portrays the goofy stoner dude, but I've seen him act really vicious and violent in matches, even when he is working as a babyface, especially in longer matches like the one with Velveteen Dream on NXT. Do you think it could work, or am I just reaching because he is too goofy a character now? Could he work as a heel when RK-Bro is done with? Not with this gimmick. I say gimmick. I get the sense that this isn't really too much of a departure from who he really is. Obviously, he's doing a lot of goofy comedy stuff on television. As long as he continues to portray that character, I cannot see it. I mean, it would have to be like a total character shift in every way. Even the way he speaks and you know, cuts his promos. I don't see it. I don't see Riddle as a heel working. Maybe he could pull it off and surprise me. But the Matt Riddle that we see on TV right now, turning heel? I don't think that would work. Brian from Montreal, Quebec. What are your thoughts on Ricochet's less scripted promos, like the emotional one on Raw Talk that one time and some recent backstage skits? Some may not agree, but I think he can be very decent on the mic. Should they give him bullet points and let him be himself? I think they should let everybody get bullet points and be themselves. Why should that be limited only to Ricochet? They should do that for everybody on the roster. I mean, you're going to have people who are just really bad and inexperienced at cutting promos who need the help. Some people might benefit from scripted promos, but I think the vast majority would benefit from what you just talked about. Ricochet is one of those people. Ricochet is not a great promo. From what I have seen of him on WWE television, he is not a good promo. Is there a good promo buried deep within that we just have not been able to see or hear? Maybe. Maybe it's buried somewhere within. It's like I say that about Jungle Boy. Jungle Boy is a great wrestler. Jungle Boy is one of the fastest rising stars in AEW. Jungle Boy is not a good promo. And the only way he's going to become one and get better is repetition. Over time. He doesn't have a lot of experience cutting his own promos. He's not going to be scripted or overly scripted in AEW the way he would be in WWE. But he's just not comfortable doing them. He has admitted it. He is not good on promos. The hope is that as young as he is, over time, he'll get better. And if Ricochet, if they take the handcuffs off him a little bit and let him be a little more like himself, he probably would be better off that way. I still don't consider him to be a great promo, though. You know, the Raw talk thing where he got all emotional and his eyes were all red like he was, you know, practically in tears. That probably was the best work I've seen of him on the mic. But that's just not how they do television, you know? You don't have the chance very often to go out there and just be yourself. So I don't know if Ricochet has it within him to be a really good promo or not, but from what I have seen of him, even with some of the backstage stuff that you mentioned, I don't really think he's been very good. His strength is in the ring. It's not on the mic. And Donnie from Baltimore, do you have any stories or information about that one guy who is always there? In every ECW show I've ever watched, there was always that one guy in the Hawaiian shirt. Former ECW fans know who I'm talking about. In every Stardom show, there was always that old fat frumpy guy in the wife beater in the front row facing the hard camera. Are there any other stories about famous ever-present fans? There's tons of them. I mean, the one that I always think of, because I would see him all the time on television growing up watching those WWE shows, was Vladimir. Vladimir the Superfan. They just did a whole documentary, WWE Network did, on Vladimir that was supposed to come out this summer, and then they sort of had this moratorium on documentary stuff, and it's sort of being held in limbo. Last I heard, they were maybe thinking of submitting it to film festivals, but we were supposed to get the Vladimir documentary, I think, in July. And it just, July came and went. Remember, we were supposed to get Lex Luger, that Icons episode on Lex Luger? Whatever happened to that? It was done. It had an air date. It's almost November. There still has been no word on it. So I don't know when we're going to see the Vladimir doc, but that, from what I understand, is very good. I would see him everywhere. All the Madison Square Garden shows, any of the events in the tri-state area, any big show, you would always see him. And he was kind of the muscular guy who was wearing the tank top with the glasses. That was Vladimir. He's still around. He's still doing well. I got to meet him in New Orleans, actually. I think it was the first WrestleMania in New Orleans. So that would have been 30. Walking down Bourbon Street, and who do I see? I spot Vladimir. I could spot him from a mile away. Got my picture with him. He's still in great shape. He doesn't look really any different than he did years ago. So he's the one who I think of. In WWE land these days, you always see that guy with the long hair who looks like he's there with his grandmother. No offense to her, but that's kind of what it looks like. I don't know what his deal is. The guy in the green shirt guy, I'm sure he has a name. I don't know him. I've seen him. Many of the events that I've been to, he's always there. Always in the same spot. Front row. Opposite hard cam. Brock Lesnar shirt guy. He always finds his way to these things. But the one I always come back to is Vladimir. Vladimir's old school. Vladimir probably doesn't fuck with any of this new shit from WWE. I'd be surprised, frankly, if he even watched anymore. But he was the man. TheSolemnMonster@gmail.com is the place to email all of your questions, comments. That is the best way to reach me. Don't forget, Luna Vachon, Dark Side of the Ring review is up right now on YouTube. 27 minutes for your listening pleasure. Talking about last week's episode, and then later on this week, I'll have my review for the Rob Black XPW episode. We only have two left. XPW and then the steroid trials. And then this season of Dark Side is over. Halloween Kills. I'm still getting tweets about this. I am watching the movie tonight on Peacock. I will have a review in the next few days. I don't know that it'll be Monday because I'm just fucking slammed. If not Monday, I'm hoping by Tuesday. I will get something up. I promise. I did it for the first Halloween one in 2018. I will do one for this. I will get it up on YouTube. I did it for the Many Saints of Newark a few weeks ago. So watch for that. And Crown Jewel is on Thursday. I am not sure if that 12 p.m. Eastern start time is the start time for a pre-show or if that is the actual start time. I want to say there's a pre-show and the actual event may not be starting until 1 o'clock, but don't quote me on that. Whatever the case is, when Crown Jewel is over, come on by the YouTube channel because I'll be recapping the whole thing, all the good, the bad, and the ugly, live on YouTube Thursday afternoon. And Friday night, I'll be back again with you live the next night for the Rampage recap. No Dynamite next Saturday. Probably not going live after Dynamite next Saturday. But you'll get episode 727 of the podcast next Sunday, as you do each and every week. And then a week after that, on Sunday this year, Halloween. Get the Halloween episode of The Sound Of. I guess that'll be episode 728. So a lot of content coming your way. Thank you all. Thank you all our new channel members on YouTube. All of your support on there making this all worthwhile and very fun for me to do. I appreciate the hell out of each and every single one of you. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic week. Join me for all this great content and back next Sunday for 727. Until then, take care, guys.
The Solomonster sounds off.
Shayna Baszler, 416 days as NXT Women's Champion. Lost to a wine snob because of a possessed doll. And then went and yelled at said doll. If this is their version of a horror movie, Shayna Baszler is about to be killed off. Fire shot out of the ring post, which distracted Shayna, who was promptly rolled up and pinned. This woman gets rolled up so much, Snoop Dogg is gonna start smoking her.
It's the one and only Deagle Double G.
Snoop Dogg! Snoop Dogg!
The Solomonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesolomonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow The Solomonster on Twitter, @Solomonster.
Solomonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Solomonster Sounds Off.